Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Spoken Heard. This is Susan Dobie Chase, and today I am thrilled to bring you Mr. Danny Strack. How are you, Danny?
I'm good. How are you doing, Susan?
I'm doing very well, thank you. We were just talking before the air a little bit about your life and what's going on, and you seemed really, really excited about the book that you're just putting out. I was wondering if you wanted to start out by talking a little bit about that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, you know, I try to put out a book about once a year. Sometimes it's once every 2 years. And the last time I put out a book was January or February of 2015. So it seemed like about time for my 2016 book. And it talks a lot about politics. It seems like I just haven't been able to stop writing about things like Donald Trump and war. Just kind of gone with it and filled up a book with material on various topics, yeah.
Nice. So how long have you been working? A year?
Yeah, a little over a year. I think that I'm going to read the first poem from it, and I actually wrote this first poem, I think, the same month that I released my last book. So it was like February of 2015, I think.
And
it's surprising that it's still relevant, you know? A lot of the things that have been going on politically in the country, I kept thinking were going to go away. Stuff like Donald Trump, you know, I thought that would just be a flash in the pan, and it turned out to be news all year.
The scary reality, you know? Right.
Yeah. So I wrote some poems about Donald Trump, and I thought they were going to be useful for like a month, you know? I can still do them. It's great. I guess.
Yeah, it's a little scary to me, but I appreciate so much that you can work in that realm without feeling intimidated by the voices of outsiders who may or may not condemn what you have to say. And I appreciate so much people who can go into that realm and say what they want to say without worrying about other people's opinions. So congratulations on that.
Well, thanks. I hope I don't worry too much about other people's opinions. I'm sure most slam poets can tell you, you know, we do care about those five people with scorecards. So it's hard not to completely not care about other people's opinions. But yeah,
right.
I try.
Well, do you want to start out and read that one right away?
Yeah, sure. Like I said, this is the first poem in my new book. $1.79 for gas? That is so cheap. I want to pour it all over my body. Slather it on like sunscreen. I think I want to make a slip and slide from gasoline. Fill up my electric car. I'm going to fill the frame of my bicycle. Won't that just make it heavier? Yeah, but it's so cheap. I want to start using it as a condiment. Slap it on my sandwich like mayonnaise. I want to use it as a glaze of my Easter ham. God damn, that's so cheap. I want to start drinking it. Move over, Long Island iced tea. Give me some Texas tea. Hoo-wee. That's cheaper than 2 liters of clean water at that same station. I'm used to only seeing this number grow. Holy frack, how did it get so low? Well, holy frack, they fracked the holes. What does that mean? It's not that complicated. Here in America, we have all this oil that was too deep underground to get to with drills. So we came up with a new technique called hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, which is where they take clean water, mix it with toxic chemicals, then pump the mixture underground so it forces the oil out. They leave all the toxic shit in the ground to contaminate the drinking water and soil, but that doesn't matter because now we got all this oil. Just so much oil. I'm going to use it to deep fry my turkey this year. So much oil, we're going to need America's whole bread basket to sop it up. So anyways, OPEC, an organization of petroleum exporting countries. That's right. They saw that America had all this oil, so they started maintaining high production, which artificially reduced the price of oil, and that is why a gallon of gas suddenly costs about the same as a grande coffee at Starbucks, or half of a venti mocha from Starbucks, or a third of a bag of ground roast coffee at Starbucks. I'm just saying, Starbucks coffee is unreasonably expensive. Yet gas is surprisingly cheap right now, which is great. You know what's not great? We didn't used to have earthquakes in Texas or Oklahoma. We started fracking, and guess what? Earthquakes throughout Texas and Oklahoma every year since. What's not great is oil barons stealing back shitty land we gave the Native Americans in the Dakotas so they can profit from poisoning it. What's not great is flammable tap water in homes too close to fracking sites. Thousands of Americans with cancer from living too close to fracking sites. So anyways, fracking is where you take clean water and trade it for cheap gas. And now, you can buy gas for less than a liter of water at that same station.
Wow. All right, so when you started that, where did it come from?
Well, everybody was talking. I wrote this, like I said, last February. Everybody was talking about how great it was that gas had dropped to below $2.
Right.
And it was. And it was really kind of a revelation last year. And I mean, it still feels that way, although maybe not quite as much. And I got to say, especially here in Texas, I went to New York City earlier this year, and I was thinking about reading this poem, and somebody mentioned to me that nobody drives.
Right.
But down here in Texas, everybody drives, and the price of gas is a topic of conversation, you know? So going from like $3, $3.50, $4 down to, like I said, $1.79, or, you know, I think it was like $1.60, the cheapest I ever saw it. It was really a very popular thing, but it had ramifications for the country, and I thought it was important to actually like explore where that came from. So the second place it came from was actually trying to educate myself on, you know, why the price of gas has come down, and then try to figure out how to, you know, pass that message on to a general audience in a way that they would find both palatable and, in fact, pleasing in the course of a work you're reading, you know?
Right.
And that's always a fun game to play.
Right, exactly. And, you know, when I compare New York City to Texas, it takes forever to get out of Texas. I mean, if you're driving from Austin, where you're at, and you try to get out of the state of Texas, how many hours does it take out to get out, like six or something at the nearest point? And here you've got New York City and no one's driving a car. It's kind of an interesting juxtaposition there.
That's true, yeah. It takes about 6 hours to get out in just about any direction. It might be like 5.5 if I go north. And I'm trying to get to Oklahoma City.
And that amazes me about Austin, just how much of Texas you have to get through to get anywhere else.
True.
Yeah. So fracking and earthquakes, going back to the poem. Just curious, I mean, do people there talk about that as if it's a problem, or do they just kind of try to sweep that under the rug? What's the public opinion like?
It's a great question. So here in Austin, I think a lot of people don't know about it. The earthquakes have been happening around Dallas and Denton. And, you know, if you're paying attention to local news, then you know. But they haven't directly affected us here yet. And so part of my thought with this poem was that, I was going to be, you know, educating local people about what's going on and what might be affecting them. I've heard a couple people talk about it, you know, people who are in the know. But I think that, like I said, the popularity of cheap gas will kind of make people forget their environmental morals a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you look at, you know, politically what it has done for America, cheap gas has been really great for us economically. So it's hard to argue that it's a pure negative.
Right.
But that doesn't mean there aren't some serious negative consequences, like, you know, a lot of Americans getting cancer.
Wow, that's really interesting, and I'm glad that you're starting us off there with, like, something that it seems so overwhelmingly in one way until you look behind the veil, and that's the art of spoken word in a lot of cases for me. Well, I do a lot of listening, and I do a lot of reading, and it always seems like it's the don't trust the man behind the curtain kind of Wizard of Oz message that comes in about partway through, and I haven't heard anything else written about fracking, and so I think that that's a really unique topic, and I just love it. So when is this book coming out, and where can we get it, and what else is involved in it? Tell me more.
Sure. Well, so the book's going to come out next month. I've got all the poems done, and I have a couple of editors looking at it right now, so I usually self-publish, and you can go to my website, which is DannyStrack.com, and get links to all of the books that I'm currently putting out on the web. Some of my older books are out of print. I've almost like juvenilia now. But, yeah, I think my most recent 5 books are up there, and this one will be, too. It'll be called Yellow. So if somebody were to go to my website and about a month, I think they would be able to order this for print on demand.
Excellent. And Yellow, what is the title about?
Well, I want to give you the condensed version of the story. So it goes like this. I put out books in cycles, cycles of 4. So my first cycle, the names of the books were Blim Blam, Zip Zap, Zowie Kapow, Rur Wap. So they were all onomatopoeia of some sort. And then I put out like a best of called Forever. And then there was a new cycle, and it went rebirth, growth, focus, expansion. And then I put out a third cycle, and basically I'm naming them after my favorite things. So the first one was called 52. That's my favorite number. And I'm calling it Yellow because that's my favorite color.
Well, that's cool. I love it.
Yeah.
Why is 52 your favorite number?
Third cycle. 52 is my favorite number because it is the number of cards in a deck, the number of weeks in a year. If you flip it, it's still 52. If you flip it another way, it's 25. It is 2 sets of 5 bars on a digital clock. Like the 5 is made up of 5 bars and the 2 is made up of 5 bars. And there's 2 sets of them.
Wow.
It's also 13 times 4. And a lot of people think 13 is unlucky, but I like 13. And 4 is power number 2. It's a good number, and it keeps showing up in my life. I love it.
Good. Good. What a wonderful thing to have a favorite number and have real honest reasons for it other than I like it. So do you want to read a second?
I'm enthusiastic about things, you know? Like, I think people are so obsessed with being cool sometimes, and they should just be like, you know, I like the number 2. It's a good number. And every time I see it, it makes me happy. Like I like that.
The number 2. Yeah. So I was wondering if I could get you to read a second thing for us.
Sure. I was a little torn on my second poem. I have a brand new poem for this book about my cat, but I also have this poem that's a little bit older, and I have a reprise in the book. Do you want to hear the new thing or the older reprise?
Oh, I can't decide that. You have to decide what you want to read. My goodness, I can't do it for you.
No. You know, I know better than to give audiences choices of what poem. I really do. Okay, I'll read this. It goes like this. When a far-left liberal views the world through blue-tinted glasses, Republicans all look the same. They'll always be the ones to blame. Religion nuts denying the science behind global warming while embracing the science of global war and oil refining. They want to give automatic machine guns and grenades to kids. They can kill all the Muslims and Mexicans coming into the country and taking jobs they wouldn't have worked anyways. Then arrest everybody, try them as adults, and put them to work in industrialized jails. They want Obama to fail and Hillary to die. They want every cop in riot gear, and they pray every day to Jesus Christ and Donald Trump. But always right conservative slips on his own rose-tinted glasses. Democrats all look the same too. Dude, unrealistic, atheistic flip-floppers can't agree on anything but taking away guns and defense spending and pumping the money into abortions for married trans triads and health care for trees. They want Syrian refugees sleeping on all our couches, making that terrorist pots to handle free pot that'll turn all our kids into gay, communist, free-ranging, free-loving soccer players. And if our country was a movie theater, most of our politicians would sit in the thin wings. Well, the rest of us would occupy the wide stripe in the middle with the best view of the action, where we can't hear the soundtrack running under the shouting match between left and right, dueling with one-sided debates. They can't even hear their own arguments because their heads have been shoved up their asses so long that shit is now full of them. Political discussion in America is politically disgusting. The debates been taken over by extremists, news programs populated by pretty people repeating talking points, news stories calculated to get ratings rather than report. And if I wanted to watch someone lip-sync meaningless shit, I'd turn to BuzzFeed and learn the 9 surprising ways Justin Bieber drank himself into the tabloids this week. But if I want real news, I turn to John Oliver or Larry Wilmore. Like, the truth has turned so tainted we can't take it without a joke to help it go down. Like, the truth is a prop and a complicated magic trick, and we're also mesmerized by the wizard's hands. We don't notice the mirrors turning 3D scenes into 2D images. And that's what's wrong with extremists. They only see one flat side of a world in 3 dimensions, like someone forgot to hand them their 3D glasses. If you want to watch a movie without getting a splitting headache, your glasses need one red lens and one blue lens. Otherwise, you can't see what's really happening.
Wow. A message of unity in a time of political election that seems like such a rarity for us right now as a nation.
I agree. And it makes me sometimes timid about reading this poem, but, you know, the truth is it resonates almost anywhere I've ever done it.
Right.
Which is really interesting to me. I really mean it when I say that most people, I think, would occupy the wide stripe in the middle.
Yeah, probably. Probably true. But because it's all, like, minute-long, 30-second-long sound bites and people trying to catch each other up in their own words. And, you know, I think that we do a disservice to each other by constantly, I don't know, framing it as if it were a prize fight, right? And who delivers the next blow and how daunting is it? And instead of really discussing issues at all, as we've heard so far in this election, if, in my opinion.
I agree. Yeah. You know, I think that one of the problems with politics, and a lot of the reason I wanted to write that poem, and the reason I still do it, even though, I mean, the truth is I'm a pretty hardcore liberal, you know. I feel like the political process in America is largely run by people who are motivated towards changing the system. The problem is the system is, like, pretty moderate. So if you want to change it, you probably have an extreme idea of some sort. Now, you know, I want to change it because I have kind of extreme ideas, but I'm willing to see the other side of the argument, you know?
Right.
So I feel like if you look at somebody like Donald Trump, like, of course his ideas are extreme. He wants to change the existing system. He thinks that, you know, use in moderation are not good things. So, you know, I think a lot of extremists get in power, and that's not necessarily the people that we want to be in power. I think what we really need is like a moderation party or a center party of some sort. And I'm really hoping that as the Republican Party falls apart, that there will be more room for third parties and maybe for extreme moderates, you know?
Right. I'm really interested in what's going to happen at the Republican convention.
I don't know. I think Donald Trump will get the nomination. I think that in the long run, over the course of the next like 4 or 5 years, the Tea Party faction will continue wanting to split off, and ultimately that's probably what I think is going to happen. But I don't think that's going to happen this year.
Wow. But we shall see. We shall see. I know you're the long-term slam master and executive director at Austin Poetry Slam, but did you give that up recently?
I did,
I'm looking at your bio. Well, how are you feeling without it? That's been a long commitment from 2011 until now.
Yeah, no, I actually feel really good about that. I'll tell you the story. Austin Poetry Slam started about 21, 22 years ago in, I believe, 1994. Mm-hmm. And the same guy ran it for the next 15 years. His name was Mike Henry. He was a really great guy. And he carried the slam on his back and built it into a respected show in Austin. And, about 5 years ago, he decided to retire. At the time, I'd been on a bunch of Austin slam teams and was the slam champ that year. And it was like the secretary on the council. So he asked me if I would like to take over as slam master. And I didn't really. I'm a writer and performer, and I was afraid that it would impact my ability to write and perform and the amount of time that I had to do that. And the truth was it did, you know, it took a lot of time. And so because I didn't want to do it, but he talked me into it and the community, you know, talked me into it a bit, and it became clear that it was me or nobody, you know. So I committed to a 5-year stint, and it was important to me to have like a goal in mind when it came to that. So I said, you know, I'll do it for 5 years. A slam master term is 5 years. Mike Henry served 3 terms. I'm going to serve 1. After that, I'm going to pass it off. And so I think that gave me a lot of energy, and it gave me a time frame in which I had to make change. So, you know, I did my best to grow the show, and we've been doing really well. The slam did grow under my leadership, and we've been selling out like a 200-seat theater every week, basically.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's called the Spider House Ballroom.
Okay.
It's technically 225 capacity, and some of it is standing, so it's like a mix of seating and standing. But, yeah, we've been selling out a lot, making a lot of money, you know. Slam's in a really great financial position, and we've been able to support other poetry organizations in town. And then I found somebody with a lot of energy for it and passed it on to them. And his name is Jomar Valentin. He's doing a great job. And it means that I'm still involved. You know, I'm on the council as a non-voting advisor to the Slam Master and trying to pursue things like putting out this new book, which, you know, was hard to do when I was running the show.
Well, I believe it. I really do. And you deserve all the credit in the world for being able to stay with it for so long. I know that things pop up and it's not always, you know, you put yourself in kind of that political position that you were talking about earlier. And it can be really, really uncomfortable at times, but it also can be really wonderful to see how you've made things grow. And I'm glad that you see that side of it. I really am, because 5 years in that position and you did a lot. And the fact that Austin is constantly, you know, selling out huge venues just for, you know, its local slams, much less anything else, is just an inspiration to a lot of other towns that are struggling to do, well, certainly that. I mean, that is incredible. And you were the coach at NPS and Bennett NPS a whole bunch of times, and It's August. It's slam season. It's national season. How are you doing with that? Are you going this year?
You know, I'm planning to go. I just kind of decided that a few days ago. We won the national group championship last year, the team I was coaching.
Oh, congratulations.
And thanks, yeah. One of the things that we've been talking about is putting on a panel about group poetry. You mentioned Austin in general as a city and our slam scene. There's actually two slams from Austin. There's Austin Poetry Slam on Tuesdays and then Austin Neo Soul, which is an open mic most Thursdays, and then they have slams a few times a year, you know. I was on the Neo Soul team back in 2012, the first year they won the national group finals. And then I wasn't on the team the next year, but they won it again the next year. And then the year after that, they got second, and the year after that, they got third. And then this
wow.
year, APS won, and Neo got third again. Actually, this year, APS won, and that's the year I'm talking about, that Neo got third.
Way to go, Austin. My goodness.
Yeah, like, in terms of group poetry, we kind of have a dynasty down here. So we
yeah.
were talking about putting a panel on group poetry at NPS, and that's what we're talking about doing right now. Yeah.
Lovely. I'm really glad you're going to do that. It's just you guys down there have it all going on, and you know, in no small part is that you're doing, Danny. So you should feel really, really good about that. And we're going to come into the end of the show in the next couple of minutes. So, are there any dates, times, places, events, other merchandise that you want to make sure people know about before we move into the end here?
No, I don't think so. I guess I should mention I'm also working on a book about poetry slam and how to run poetry slams.
Oh, good.
And, you know, come talk to me and ask me about it in person because it's a long story. So if anybody wants to know about it, send me a note or come talk to me.
All right. Sounds good. Well, coming into the end stretch here, I'm going to get Danny to read in just a second, but I want to say thank you to the people who helped me out behind the scenes, notably Rick McIntyre, who does a great deal for me. I want to wish you a wonderful week, and until then, I hope everyone is kind to one another, and without further ado, I bring you the multi-talented Mr. Danny Strack.
All right, thank you again. It's been really great.
You're welcome.
Over 40 years ago, the Supreme Court issued their decision in Roe v. Wade, finding for Roe, legalizing abortion during the first trimester and leaving the decision in the hands of the mother. The conservative side of our land hasn't rested a second since trying to overturn this decision. There's this Christian joke about a man of faith who climbs on top of his house to avoid a flood. As the waters rise, his friends float by in a boat and offer him a lift. No thanks, he says. God will save me. Eventually, the man drowns. He ascends to heaven and goes before God and says, what the heck? I thought you were going to save me. And God says, yeah, I sent you that boat. Some days, life is nothing but a struggle to keep your head above water. And some days, while struggling, carrying a new life into the world would be like carrying a boulder out into the ocean. Both of you will only drown. For anyone with a womb, God built a boat and called it abortion. He said you can row. You don't have to just wade out into the water and wait for it to pull you under. How could anyone seek to overturn that boat? Abortion is not an issue that only affects one gender. There are far too many biological men speaking out against reproductive rights. There need to be more speaking out for them.
This is Spoken Herda. I'm Susan Dobie Chase. Until next week, be kind to one another. Thank you, Danny Strack.
Thank you, Susan. It's been great.